is itself impacted by race and other issues that play an impact. I mean, ultimately, you know, I think there are many aspects of this case, and I'm very appreciative to the Blake family who you've interviewed earlier for all of their work organizing and being active to try to help people understand what goes on in these cases and what the injustice is here. But think about in this case, we cannot forget the racial context surrounding this case. First and foremost is I'm so glad you put the Blakes on, because of course the story of the Rittenhouse shooting and Anthony Huber's case ultimately starts with the shooting of Jacob Blake, an unarmed black man. And it ends with a white 17-year-old with an assault rifle shooting three people and literally walking away with the smoking gun in his hands. And the police, they don't just not shoot him, they just let him walk away. And so the juxtaposition of these sets of circumstances is stark, and it says something about this country. But that's not the only sort of racial context that exists here, as important as it is. The other one is, how does a jury perceive arguments of self-defense? When they look at an individual and make these subjective assessments about whether or not you really perceived a threat, whether you were in fact yourself a threat, the extent to which we believe in your Second Amendment right to carry a gun or not, all of these things are impacted by race.
The idea that a black man could have walked into that town
with an assault rifle, created a menacing and dangerous situation, and then turn around and argue self-defense and say, hey, the dangerous situation that I created by showing up with an assault rifle,
Swaminathan, we have to leave it there.
I thank you so much. To shoot people.
Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Check out Ear to the Streets of Portland with hosts Sequoina
and Kayla
every first and third Thursday of the month starting at 7 o'clock p.m.
Listen in as we interview community organizers, speak on issues focused on Black Portland, and share community events happening in the area and elsewhere.
Listen on the radio at 90.7 FM, online at www.kbu.fm, or from your mobile phone at m.kbu.fm.
Follow KBU on Instagram at KBU Radio. Ear to the Streets.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO FM 90.7 in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, 104.3 Corvallis, Albany. And via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. This is Monday, the 22nd of November. It is approximately 8:01 a.m. And this is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott, and I am grateful that you took some time out of your day to spend with us. This community radio station depends on the energy and the inspiration of our listeners.
And our volunteers.
And volunteers too, yeah. Listeners and volunteers. People. It is people generated.
We used to say people powered.
People power. Okay. Uh-huh. Well,
I don't know if we still do or not, but yeah.
Okay. And so we're grateful. And, you know, the voices you hearing right now, I am Cecil Prescott.
I am Celeste Carey. And we are your cohorts in conversation for your community connection, KBOO Radio, 90.7 here in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River and White Salmon, Washington, in Philomath, 104.3, and everywhere. It's KBOO.FM. Welcome to More Talk Radio.
How are you this morning, Celeste?
Well, I mean, you know, all things considered, I'm tired. You know, there's a lot of things going on. I mean, I'm optimistic on some levels and frustrated and perplexed on others. But overall, I guess I'll say I'm trying to go with the flow.
Oh, I thought you were going to start singing Optimistic by Sounds of Blackness, but...
You know, that would be helpful. I need a jump start. But yeah, how about yourself?
I am well. I am here, and personally, things are okay with me and in my world. That is not the case with so many in our community and indeed throughout the world. This week, I had a discussion, a debate about the holiday that's coming up on this week in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
What to call it and what people are doing for it. And, you know, it's however you pay attention to it or not pay attention to it, it might be an opportunity, a day for reflection. And, you know, as we approach the end of the calendar year, reflecting about who we are, how we are, and what are our hopes, anticipations, concerns as we wind down this calendar year and begin a new calendar year. So I think I'm in a period of reflection.
Okay, that works. I mean, with this being near the end of yet another tumultuous year, I can appreciate people looking for any reason to kind of pause and reflect. I have decided that regardless of the historic beginnings and missteps and outright, you know, egregious behaviors, I'm going to still be thankful because, well, among other things, I have my faculties. So, you know, I don't know if I'm traveling. It just doesn't seem particularly well advised. But I thought one of the things we would do today is just give people a chance to collectively process some of the things that are going on, especially like we're following in the news the Ahmaud Arbery trial. We are following in the news on the aftermath of the Rittenhouse trial. We're following in conversation and news the challenges that Alexandria Cortez is experiencing behind Representative Gozar's egregious behavior. And this is all taking place in some of the highest places of justice and equity making, I guess I'll say. And so for a lot of people, they just feel like, you know, we are not just going down, but we're spiraling down the drain. This is not going downhill. This is spiraling down the drain.
Yes.
And so one of the things we like to do is just give people a chance to talk without it being politicized and inflamed and people feeling provoked, but rather they can kind of address elements of this, you know, and feel like they're coming away a little bit lighter, that we're communally conversing and coming away lighter so that we can heal and maybe, I don't know, heal our immediate circles.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's important for us to seek healing for a period of time to collect our thoughts. And I am comfortable with things being political, politics being of the people. So that's fine. A part of, I think, the concerns is how we engage with one another in terms of community conversations. And certainly we have witnessed in these days how everything has become almost radioactive in terms of having a conversational or political disagreement. But that's where we are. And so I'm curious about how people are reflecting about these things these days. Those who are listening live, earlier we heard the news program Democracy Now, and in it I'm talking about the aftermath of the trial in the city of Kenosha, and how the shooter of Gage Grosskreutz and Anthony Huber and
Rosenbaum.
Yes, Jacob Rosenbaum was freed, charged not guilty, and walked away. I thought, you know, it is certainly a sign of the times, but not the only thing we have to reflect on. How are people processing this, the results of this trial, and where do we go from here in terms of what is possible next steps? You mentioned, Celeste, how we are also paying attention to the trial of the three men charged with killing Ahmaud Arbery. And we'll see the outcome of that trial as well. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We welcome your calls and your reflections about these jury trials. Also, how you are thinking about this year and the year to come, as this is a period of reflection. So,
I don't know about everybody else, but I'm not going to spend any energy trying to ponder on what's going to happen in the year to come. Beyond how I'm going to prepare myself mentally, you know, physically, spiritually, emotionally, because what's that song? Anything Goes? And so I'm trying to be careful. But, you know, for the conversation here, I mean, we know there are larger political and social forces at work, but we want to kind of focus more on just kind of being more minded with how people are able to kind of process and move forward for the Black community and for communities of colors at large. You know, one of the things that's frightening about this case is there were things that this young man did that were against the law, that were illegal. Purchasing a gun illegally, carrying it across state lines, yada, yada, yada. And the frustrating thing about this is none of those issues were even addressed. So much like when we had Rodney King being beat by the officers, a lot of folks of color just said when those officers were acquitted, this is open season on Black people.
It's the state of reality. One person tweeted, we just witnessed a system built on white supremacy validate the terroristic acts of a white supremacist. This only further validates the need to abolish our current system. White supremacy cannot be reformed. And that was a rare tweet by Colin Kaepernick.
And, you know, what is significant about this is saying that the system works. It doesn't work for us because it's not designed for the ordinary person or the person of color. who was at the time legally defined as not a human being. So, you know, don't be surprised. Be expecting stuff to be twisted. When this young man, Kyle Rittenhouse, says, oh, I support Black Lives Matter, you know, you have to wonder, because the people he killed seem to also support Black Lives Matter. So, I mean, what does that say? And we have to be really sophisticated to the rhetoric that's going to be coming out of these types of events, because it's not just the dog whistle. It's a gauntlet dropped at the feet of civilized discourse and the legal system for people who are not white. And so, you know, that's why I'm just saying I'm focusing on how I'm going to respond more so than worrying about what's going to happen, because I already know. I mean, the writing's on the wall, as they say. But the numbers are 503-231-8187. And we'll go to our first caller, Jonas, who's been holding. And then after that, we have Francis. Please get your calls in early. Good morning, Jonas.
Good morning. Thank you for your show, and it's an important topic. I happen to be listening to most of Democracy Now! This morning, and at the end they quoted Biden reacting to this verdict as saying, well, I have confidence in the jury's decision, and it's like, wow, what a cop-out that was. You can't even admit that our system is very unequal in its justice? Good grief. So that's my narrow response, and then I want to quickly make a wide response to our nation as a whole. When Yogananda lost his court case in the 20s or early 30s, he was accused of sexually being somehow negligent or sexually involved with women in meditation classes that he was teaching. So a complete false accusation, and he actually lost his case. He was pretty despondent, and his reaction to the press was, the spiritual ignorance of this nation will be its undoing. And so I think we're living in those undoing times right now. That's my wide response.
Well, you know, as they say in the vernacular, chickens have come home to roost.
Yep. Boy. Yeah, you know, I read Mary Trump's book about called The Reckoning that came out not long ago. And boy, is that well said, describing some of the sins of our nation's history. And the collective we is in denial of how great our sins have been, then we're just going to continue to wallow in mistakes, you might say. Mistake is putting it mildly.
Yes, yeah. That's so true. But
yeah, well, thanks again for your show.
All right, thank you for your call.
Thank you so much. And as you say, we continue to wallow in our mistakes or sins, you know, as we prepare for the holiday this coming week. The origins of it is based on our sins or on our faults, and we've haven't yet addressed that honestly and openly as a nation.
It's not in the will of this nation's DNA to have a reckoning, to have a reconciliation of any type. I mean, you know, you have teachers, and it's really appalling, and I'm going to lay it square at the feet here. You have young white teachers who are telling kids that slavery was not so bad, or slavery didn't exist, or pretend you were a slave for a day, or what was something good about slavery. And when you start obfuscating, when you start throwing out smoke screens, when you use I don't want to say normalizing language, but you know, reframing techniques like that, and you start proselytizing. There we go. When you start indoctrinating and proselytizing young people to think that, you know, bad is good like that, how can we not expect, how can we not expect issues? Because the rest of us know, we will not forget. We know these things happen, and we're not going to let that injustice just put on a whitewash, and y'all can take that whatever way you want, and continue as though nothing egregious, nothing bad has happened.
Well, as we gather on this day and unable to come to a reckoning, certainly the indigenous people of this land have an alternative view of this. But you know, one thing you can do is take some time. This isn't only the month in which we celebrate this feast as a nation, but it also has been declared National Native American Heritage Month. Take some time to learn about the people and the land that we are, the people
that we're occupying,
the land we're occupying, the people who continue to exist and resist. I think Francis has been holding for a while. Let's go to Francis. Good morning, Francis.
Hi. Nice to talk to you guys. First of all, on a personal note, I'd just like to say I'm thankful for having survived a heart attack last month, the week after my 73rd birthday.
Oh.
So I'm happy to be here and ready to welcome a new grandson in March.
Oh, wow.
You know, recently I listened to a conversation with Angela Davis, in which she spoke about the conviction of Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd. And she spoke of issues that at the root of his trial that were more fundamental than his actual conviction. The structural racism that facilitated his actions and the prison industrial complex, which I liken to New Age slavery.
Yes.
Ms. Davis has been an active advocate for the abolition of the barbaric prison industry. And I'm going to quote her right here. She said, in order to move in the direction of something like transformative justice or restorative justice, we have to consider all of the conditions that led to the creation of harm. Rather than simply create a kind of cycle that leads from one form of violence to another, end quote. So whatever that accountability or justice system is, or that we can eventually hopefully create, it must be even-handedly administered. And most disheartening about this case with Kyle Rittenhouser is that it is really not disputed that if that little frightened, misguided boy carrying a great big gun, Kyle Rittenhouse, had been a young black man, he would have never made it to the point of arrest, but rather would have been shot dead right there in the street by law enforcement, and his mama and or his friends who accompanied him across state lines and helped him acquire that big old gun would have been arrested and charged with accessory before the fact.
Well, let's just assume that he may not have even been able to buy the gun. Let's go all the way back to the beginning. He may not have been able to buy the gun. He may have been apprehended at that very point. But everything you said is true, though, Francis. Yeah.
And if we remember, the rally was for the officers shooting
of Jacob Blake.
Jacob Blake. In the back, 7 times, an unarmed young black man. And in the case of Rittenhouser, he wouldn't have had a judge who was constantly making rulings in his favor, and such as not allowing the prosecution to call his victims. And allowing them to defense to refer to the peaceful protesters as rioters and looters and vandals. What is also most disheartening is the fact that thousands of people, men and women, are currently incarcerated for allegedly committing much less egregious acts.
Yes.
And as we know, the 14th Amendment, Equal Protection Amendment, was adopted in an effort to remedy problems people recently freed from slavery by the 13th Amendment were having with law enforcement. And that 14th Amendment, which, by the way, corporations have called upon to establish their own personhood, provides for due process and equal protection under the law.
Certainly.
I think that amendment needs to be edited a little bit, and the word equal should be moved back about three words to where it says equal due process.
Yes.
And protection under the law, because the due process has never, ever, ever been equal, ever.
You certainly raised some excellent points, Frances, and
mm-hmm.
it should be part of a larger conversation. You know, one of the things you said initially was in terms of Angela Davis and her being an abolitionist, and as you know, the 13th Amendment, which is known as the ending of slavery, said that slavery as a involuntary servitude should be abolished except as a punishment. Slavery continues to exist.
That's why the 14th Amendment was supposedly to remedy that, but it didn't.
Yeah.
And it hasn't. And though I think the only way, I know Congresswoman Barbara Lee has tirelessly attempted to have to create a Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's the only way we're ever going to resolve this matter, is if we really sit down and be truthful about all of it. And, you know, I think about Oregon. You know, we profess to be so progressive, but up until April of 2020, Oregon and Louisiana were the only two states in the country who still allowed someone to be convicted of a felony with less than a unanimous vote by the jury.
Yeah.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, over 50 years ago, my young 19-year-old African-American husband, and I'm going to try to say this without crying, was convicted 11-1 for an alleged armed robbery and sentenced to 10 years. And it's really difficult to see these privileged people afforded all of the benefit of the doubt in the criminal justice system, as it should be, while young people who, for much less egregious acts, are sentenced to years and years and years in prison. And that needs to be resolved. And I hope it happens while I'm still alive.
Yes.
I don't know.
Well, thank you, Frances,
right.
for calling. I'm grateful that you are well, and
yes.
you're looking forward towards your grandchild, and hope you have a safe and healthy year.
And prosperous new year. Yeah. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO, Portland. I am here with my co-host, Cecil Prescott. I am Celeste Carey, and we welcome your calls at 503-231-8187. We're speaking about gaining mental, emotional, spiritual, psychic equilibrium behind yet another sucker punch. Well, no, let's just call it a sucker punch and leave it at that. You know, and trying to still build community when we see that is antithetical to everything that's going on right now, coming out of Wisconsin and other areas of our country regarding this case with Kyle Rittenhouse. And as we sit here, and I'll just say it with bated breath, waiting the outcome of the Ahmaud Arbery murder trial.
And, you know, I'd like to lift up the names of the victims.
Yes.
Instead of referring to the shooter, the killer.
Mm-hmm.
So let's remember Joseph Rosenbaum.
And Anthony Huber.
And the
survivor. Who lost their lives.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Ahmaud Arbery.
And the survivor of the Kenosha shooting, Gage Grosskreutz. Okay, well, let's go to our next caller. Robbie, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. My reflection is kind of one that it's, I feel very alienated. I find that what's happening is this polarization in the news is kind of making it harder to talk to people.
Yes.
I find that emotions get wrapped up. But it's very, and my reflection is one of, you know, I believe it was either Churchill or Franklin Roosevelt who said, if it happens in politics, it was planned.
Mm.
And
yes,
there's, and in this is in no way trying to say that these trials of Kyle Rittenhouse, I mean, everything that you have said, everything that's been said, you know, I want to echo, and I can't believe, unfortunately, a part of me could believe that it happened when I saw how the judge was treating it. But besides all of that, which the whole nation is thinking about that trial and, you know, these other two, and we're hoping for justice, what I want to say and what I want to point out is Justine Maxwell went on trial last week too.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if anybody's paying attention to the Jeffrey Epstein thing, where ironically, you know, one judge who was supposed to put Jeffrey Epstein on trial, her family was murdered. I mean, you know, if we want to talk about this accountability, you know, look who's getting away. Here we are, you know, on the verge of, you know, fighting each other, and there's the right is trying to champion this kid, and on the left here, you know, we're not getting the justice, and we're fed up. But meanwhile, Jeffrey Epstein's case is going totally unnoticed, and I just can't sit here but feel so alienated that we're gonna sit here and be like, we need this accountability. Oh, it's not happening. But at the same time, we're not holding the people that are actually accountable.
How might we do that?
Yeah, I was just going to ask the same question. When we see that they are insulated from their actions, how do we hold these people accountable?
If there were more public awareness, if everybody had been talking about the Jeffrey Epstein and Justine Maxwell stuff, I feel there would be it would be harder for them bury it under the covers. Are you aware that the judge for Epstein's trial, her family was murdered by people dressed in UPS outfits?
I haven't been following it as closely because, and this is going to sound really crazy, that some things are just more closer to me and my skin in this arena. And you know, yeah, one of the things though is we had a lot of attention on this Kyle Rittenhouse trial, and yet the outcome defies comprehension. So, you know, you have to, I'm not saying doom and gloom, all is lost, you know, abandon hope. But what I'm saying is let's be mindful of how little power we sometimes have and think of other ways, you know, to engage, because I'm not sure that some of the traditional means we've used are as effective as we'd like them to be.
Okay. Again, it's hard for me to, you know, I can sit here, and I think what Francis had said earlier is like, it's, you know, Portland likes to claim itself being so progressive.
Yes.
What I'm finding is that there's kind of like a Pied Piper leading this progressiveness towards something that I don't want any part of. I've been, you know, all over last year, I've seen a lot of the groups that are coming out here, and it's hard for me to justify a lot of their actions. And what I'm seeing is reactionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've been in this fight for a long time, and I think I've said on once was, you know, we got to be very careful with replacing justice with revenge.
Yeah.
It's hard for me. And the reason is because I go right into the thick of you know, whatever Christian patriot pair group shows up, and I'll go and I'll talk to them. I talk to them like people, you know. I'll try to brand myself as this Antifa figure that they hate, but I go up to them and I try to talk to them, and I try to use common sense, the Bible, whatever I can, to try to stop these people from being so angry. And it's hard for me when there's this reactionary on the left that's yelling at me not even to talk to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm here trying to stop the violence that's being perpetuated, and I've been met with resistance from my own side, and it's hard for me to do that. And then I step back and I look at this larger picture, and people don't even know who Justine Maxwell is.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that accountability will ever be held if we can't actually hold the right people accountable, which is the people who, in George Floyd's case, did the autopsy and said that it was drugs, and then they found out, oh, actually that was a lie. That doctor should be immediately suspended or, you know, reviewed or whatever, but that's not the case. And so I just think that we're, you know, and unless we start thinking that way, it'll never happen. So that's just my stuff, but I'll take my answers off the air. Thank you so much for this conversation. I really appreciate it. And the moment of silence for all those people that you offer and are, that have been affected by this trial. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your call, Robbie. You know, I'm going to say this, and you know, we'll discuss it further. For many folks of color, we know the limits. You know, a few of us were taken by surprise. Some of us are disheartened and even enraged. But you know, we're not so taken by surprise. And if you recall last week, one of the things Cecil and I have been discussing is the fact that you have social media using psychology and psychiatry against us by using algorithms to keep us angry and malleable and distracted and not able to keep track of all of the things that we need to be monitoring. And when you have a system like that is designed to allow things to be distorted so that it's hard for us to have a critical analysis, it's understandable that it's going to be hard for the people to want to have a conversation with their opposition. But I would say, Robbie, your energy might be better served at sitting down and talking with the people in your own camp to ask them, why don't you want to talk? Isn't that our basic way of coming to an understanding? Talking? And hold them accountable so that when you go out in mass to these protests, your own people are not throwing stones at you, you know, because I see that as a fundamental challenge. You don't have anybody in your camp who is using their entire brain. You know, they're thinking with that brain stem.
You are listening to More Talk Radio. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Let's go to our next caller. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Oh, hi. Yeah, hi. I thought there was one more ahead of me, but I just wanted to say, Celeste, what you just said in the caller before, boy, that was really, really good stuff, and it really speaks to me what I've been feeling, too. It's like you just feel like you don't, you know, both sides, there's so much wrong. What I had actually called about was my feelings as a white person of just getting my eyes kind of slowly pried open, even though I've always considered myself progressive and anti-racist. It's just the last few years of just my eyes keep getting pried open. And it reminded me of a story. I'm a musician, and I used to put together some shows and in town that were like tributes to certain aspects of jazz music, and I put together a show one time that was honoring the great jazz vocalists, male and female. I had some great singers, and one song that I really wanted to do was Strange Fruit by Billie Holiday, and because I felt like, you know, and I think back on my feeling, and this was at least 10, 12, 15 years ago, I can't remember when it was, but maybe more. My feeling was I want this song to kind of show how far we've come, you know, and look back in history and see where we were back there in the 30s when it was written. I'm trying to remember the writer's name anyway, but you know, that was my feeling back in then. And I remember when I presented it to the singer, and I think I can feel comfortable saying her name. She's a local treasure, Marilyn Keller. And I had Marilyn sing that song, and I was a little taken aback that she wasn't quite as like, "Woohoo, good, let's do that," as I had expected. And then I think the next time I wanted to do it, she said, "Yeah, I think I'll pass on that." And now I realize how much weight that must have had on her. And I looked at it like, hey, let's all, like, you know, honor how far we've come, I guess is what I was thinking in my mind. And of course she was thinking, well, we haven't come very far, I'm sure. And I think I've talked to her in years past. And anyway, it was just a little window into how, you know, my feeling of where we were. I remember back in high school feeling like, this was back in the 70s, feeling like, boy, we've come so far. Gosh, at some point we're not going to have any more. We're not going to have anywhere else to go. We'll just be at a state of enlightenment. Now I look back and think, oh, for God's sake, you know, was I ever clueless? You know, just put myself in somebody else's shoes. It's a different color, and I would have been open. And I've had a few experiences where I kind of was, and it was a big eye-opener, like, oh, God, this is what people you know, from other communities have to deal with on a daily basis. So anyway, that was just my little story of slow enlightenment, and I'm sure I'm like 0.05% there. But.
we're all on a journey.
Yes, it's an ongoing journey, you know.
And the reminder, you know, you mentioned Strange Fruit, you know, it has a fantastic history. And the writer was Abel Maripol, who was a,
right.
You know, that family, the story of his family is one for books as well. But yes,
so much there, and so much, and I was just tapping into the very, very tiny tip of the iceberg.
Well, here's the point that we should consider a takeaway, if not the, you cared, you thought about it, you expressed the measure of understanding you had and empathy at the time you had, rather than doubting it, poo-pooing it, publicly disparaging, and that counts. But, you know, I'm going to say this. You are becoming aware of what people of color, and especially black people in this country, have been saying forever. I remember I was working, I won't mention the nonprofit or the corporation I was associated with, but I was talking about the challenges, you know, of being, you know, a person of color. And in this particular venture, you know, that we were doing, and I was censured and told, oh, you know, don't play the race card. And I wasn't playing it. I was just remarking about immediate experiences I had had. And this was in, I want to say, maybe 2000. And here in Portland, Progressive Portland. And you know, and people's eyes are being opened, and but nobody still wants to process what they're seeing. They see it, they're dumbfounded or embarrassed and shamed or horrified, and then they have this moment where they kind of, like the cartoon, shake their head and they go back to, you know, the status quo. And yeah. So the thing that people can do is keep reminding folks, this is not an illusion. You found the droids you were looking for, okay?
Right.
Now remedy the situation. Yeah.
Another thing is, what I've noticed, that there's a tendency in progressive people, in good-hearted people, you know, supposedly good-hearted people, that they're on a track, they have a way of thinking, and in their mind they become a good person,
mm-hmm.
and they are for the right. And then slowly, as life goes on, they find themselves doing things that are kind of questionable, but in their mind, they are that good, progressive person, so they can do no wrong. And I think that's my theory, at least, when I look at people that are doing things and supposedly, because that's what gets me. It's been happening numerous times lately where I go, okay, if it's a MAGA person with a hat, I can kind of deal with their behavior because it fits together. together.
Yeah.
But then when I see these people that supposedly are progressive and good doing these things that I'm just scratching my head, that's what really gets me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you can't just follow, you just can't think of yourself as a good person and not check in with what you're doing on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the normalization of racism and bigotry.
Yeah.
You know, when the good people do it, well, it can't be racism.
No,
because they're
of course
good.
Not. Yeah. Just yeah. ask them.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you guys so much. I love your show. Thank you.
Thank you for your call.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on Community KBOO FM. This is we are Cecil and Celeste, and we will now talk to Cody.
Good morning, Cody.
Good morning. Can you guys hear me okay?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. We're dealing with a type of cultural oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
I heard you bring up the teachers and what the teachers are teaching in school. I heard Cecil bring up slavery and what's actually being done in the prison system. And I caught both of your highballs.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because there's always been we have an industrial prison. We have an industrial prison complex that gives jobs to the prisoners for pennies on the dollar.
Right.
And no one talks about it. No one. And what I'm saying is that it is a type of slavery. It's just under a different name. I caught that highball.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And this is my issue with Black History Month. The second issue is you brought up how the teachers are trying to minimize what, and this is why I like using the word African-American descended of slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't live in the same world we lived in 20, 30, 40 years ago. There are a lot of immigrants coming to this country, and they are oblivious. We're right back to cultural oblivion again, oblivious of the history of this country. And all they want to do is become Americans, and they'll believe whatever they're told just so long as they can get the citizenship, a lot of them. And then I say, well, let me take time out to learn what's going on here. When that teacher decided to minimize the struggle of not only slavery, but what happened after slavery, what happened during Jim Crow, what happened during convict leasing, what happened to redlining, all of that. No one's taught that. Nobody talks about it. I can't lie, Cecil and Celeste. That's partly that's partly Black folks' responsibility. And you know why? You know why it's our responsibility?
Go ahead. I'm listening.
Because I have yet to hear any public school teacher deny the Holocaust. I'll say
I'm gonna burst your bubble. I have. Okay.
I
have.
I get.
And one of the reasons why I think it's important for me to say this is not like, so they too are getting, you know, victimized. It's more like, I want to speak again to being careful as how we lay the blame on ourselves for trying to frame or refute rhetoric, because it's real easy to minimize the effect and the contributions that, as you put it, African Americans descended from slaves here in America, the contributions we've made to this country. It is easy to minimize those.
Extremely easy.
And so
extremely
you can't blame all of that on us.
Well, no,
if we don't have the powerful rhetoric to contradict this.
I as a person who. Mm-hmm. Who identifies as African American descendant of slaves, I'm partly responsible on my side. So this is why, when people say, "Well, Black person or a person of color," I have to check them, because I said that's a progressive word that was foisted upon me. I had no power to actually put my distinction in there, because my distinction is being watered down as a result of being pushed into this very large vat of people of color.
Well, I hear that, Cody, but here's another reality. Most black Americans, when I was in pre-med and then later in nursing school, one of the things I would say that would really disrupt the class is that black Americans, of African Americans descended of slaves, all of us in all parts of the New World, we are a New World race. We are not just African. We are Native American. We are Caucasian. And some of us are trying to regain the power of personhood by saying, you know what? Not only stop othering African and African descendants, but stop othering us as though we have no connection to both this country being part Native American as well as the African motherland. So I'm saying, yeah, you know.
I'm in 100% agreement with you. Again, mm-hmm. you need to understand, you said this probably years ago. Mm-hmm. Things are changing at a light speed.
Oh, yes.
Things are changing at a palpable speed to where...
you can't even keep up with it anymore.
we're losing complete control of the narrative because we're letting other fringe groups take control of that narrative for us.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Rittenhouse. Mm-hmm. A lot of people got upset with Rittenhouse. What do you think about Rittenhouse? I tell them, here's the truth of the matter. He got justice. The problem is you have to ask yourself, if he were a black man, would he have been acquitted?
He wouldn't even have been able to buy the gun. He'd be in jail for trying to buy the gun, Cody. Yes,
well, see,
we're in agreement.
That's the whole point. And I think there's a little jealousy going on, especially with what's going on in Aubrey.
Mm-hmm.
And no one really talks about how the orange guy had pardoned a black woman in Florida for doing something that was even... She was defending herself with a firearm, and it was an open-and-shut case. And they threw that black woman in jail anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, but it got no press because we are allowing the popular media to just run with whatever they want to run with. And I can honestly say the popular media has never been black people's friend, but then all of a sudden they are now. I'm a little suspicious of popular media.
I am very suspicious.
a little known fact for Black History Month, when Billie Holiday was talking about was singing her Strange Fruit. Did anyone know the FBI was hounding her and a lot of black entertainers during that time?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody talks about that. If I tell my white friends this, they'll go, no, really, stop it.
Well, yes, you're right.
We're running short on time, mm-hmm. and we have three other callers.
I don't want to use up your time, but I hopefully I was able to get our point across that I'm one of these people who don't have to feel good all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't mind telling people about my Holocaust and explaining things to them. And I'll leave it on that. Have a good night.
Well, thank you for doing that, Cody. Yes.
One other thing I would like to say, mm-hmm. Cody began talking about how we are educated. And I would remind people to take careful, close examination of their local school boards. A lot of these discussions about history, how history is taught, is a lightning point on local school boards, and all this conversation about how history is taught, which history is taught, it's happening right there in your local community. So pay attention. We have a few more callers. Let's see. Okay, let's see if we can speak to Harry and then Edie. Harry, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. I'm really perplexed this weekend about the Rittenhouse case in that it was just the murder charges, and I never saw any gun charges.
That's the point.
The gun really didn't mm-hmm. belong to him, and he crossed state lines.
Yes.
And all these... charges weren't brought up for some reason. Will they be brought up later on, or
you cannot try him again if they mention those charges? But you know, the defense was very savvy in how they framed the entire case, and right now the Kyle is subject to civil cases, civil charges, and civil suits. So we'll just have to see what happens.
And what about the federal government? Will they step in? usually, in the past, when a murder conviction was found, they were found innocent, the federal government stepped in and said it was you denied his civil rights. Of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And will the federal government step in? And
I don't know, because it would seem to me that that would require an amicus follow-up. But again, we'll just have to sit and see, you know, or start making noise. Just the fact that you're bringing it up, because that's what I said earlier. It's like, how did a 17-year-old buy a gun, an assault weapon? With what ID? Because if he used his, he should have been stopped right then, and his parents called, and he should have been remanded to juvie. But
according to the case, the prosecution says someone bought him the gun. He was going to save it for him till he turns 18.
Oh, well, 17. Did that happen? No.
Yeah.
So yeah.
And so you would think that, and also you think the federal government. Biden would have been ready for this.
Biden said our system worked.
Yeah, immediately.
I thought that was a dog whistle.
The Attorney General would step in and do something, you know.
Well, we'll see. But, you know, that's the kind of letter I would also write to other media outlets and see if they address it. Because you're bringing up good points. I was wondering how they managed to get past that. But, well, I'm sure the gun lobbies made sure it wasn't mentioned.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, thank you for your call. And good morning, Edie. You're on the line.
Good morning. As we're talking about the carefully designed and properly executed prison slavery industrial complex having double standards, if you're black or white, rich or poor, et cetera, labor, progressive versus capital right, I am concerned that we're not holding up and loving and honoring the victims of Kyle Rittenhouse's murders and the complicity of all those involved, including the police. At the same time, Friday, here at Multnomah County Courthouse, we had a Portlander have a sentencing hearing because he, like the murder victims and the paralyzed victim of Kyle Rittenhouse, were heroes trying to save the lives of others. And Alexander Dial stopped a murder by hammer and other attempted murders by the Proud Boys and their like, who as terrorists coming into Portland October 17th, 2018, and he is going to prison for being a hero saving lives while the murderers go free. And then just recently, one of these terrorists was shooting into a crowd and into a building, and he got 5 years of parole and can still carry his gun, while other people had eight years in prison for burning a few pieces of paper on concrete where nothing could spread. I think we need to be working locally to stop this double standard, demand justice, and have accountability locally. And we need to be in solidarity with the Pacific Northwest Family Circle, whose family members have been murdered, loved ones have been murdered by police, whether they are right-wing flag waving Trump supporters, as the man murdered by the cops in Forest Grove last year, or if they are military on their own property, having the police come unidentified in military tanks, killing him on his property, or if it is black women, trans women, and over, we're seeing the murders of our most vulnerable people not held accountable, and the victims not honored, and their family members terrorized by police, impoverished. One local woman's family.
We're almost out of time, caller.
So we need to do things locally to support that and change that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. You have been listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO with Celeste, and I am Cecil. Stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour, and let us hold into the light the murder victims, Joseph Rosenbaum and Anthony Huber, and the man who was wounded, Case Grosskreutz.
As well as Ahmaud Arbery and countless others. Stay tuned to Your Community Connection, KBOO, coming up next is the OMO Variety Hour. And if you enjoy being able to stay in touch with people on Your Community Connection, support us. Go to kboo.fm and support us financially, or text the letters KBOO to 44321. Thank you, and stay calm. Enjoy the life that we live.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio